Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life. This show is brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Bill Vanderbush. If any time during the show you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And Bob, do you have some words of wisdom for our listeners tonight?
I wouldn't go that far, no. I was reading an article last night, got me thinking. A bus driver, school bus driver in Scotland, was fired from his job, and he was fired from his job for good reason. Apparently, he willingly skipped picking up students on his route. He just drove, right past them. And when they questioned him, he said that he explained that he's clairvoyant, and intuitively he knew that if he stopped for the children, as opposed to, driving on, that something really bad was going to happen. So he as you might expect, his employer did not accept that excuse and said, it's inexcusable to miss, children, and terminated him. Of course, he's getting some support from the psychic and clairvoyant community in England because these things happen. So it made me think, what if he was right? I mean,
what if he's lying, though?
Let's assume that he wasn't lying.
Okay.
Which could be. I mean, maybe the guy screwed up.
Maybe the guy's just a total wackadoo.
Maybe he was drunk. I don't know.
Okay.
But let's just assume for argument's sake that this is, he was being truthful in what he said. I mean, how many, there's no way of us knowing if he did. And maybe he could have stopped and the bus could have been rear-ended, or a child could have been hit, while loading the bus, or, something that...
But he didn't give any specifics to what the...
He didn't give any specifics. But how many times in our lives do we make these decisions, and we don't know necessarily why we made the decision, and there's no way of us knowing if we averted some danger?
I think more importantly, there are times when we go into a situation, and we have a gut feeling, and we don't act upon it, and then not something tragic happens, but not the outcome was not what we wanted it to be. So my big question in this, if I were questioning him, and I know on the other side of the pond they're a lot more open to this than we are here in the United States, which is probably why he felt okay using it as an excuse or explanation in his case. But if he's going to go ahead and use it as an explanation, then he has to give some evidence that of what he really thought was going to happen, not just, and how many kids did he pass, and how long has this been going on?
What kind of evidence could he give? Maybe it was something, precognitive, and he averted it and it didn't happen. So you can't prove it with evidence.
Right, but we see that we have highly developed people in the field, and we have people not so developed in the field. Now, if he's driving a school bus, that means he's not a professional psychic or medium. So he's not highly developed, is the assumption at this point. And so the feeling or the clairvoyant concept that he's getting that he shouldn't pick up this kid may not be 100% dependable.
Right. Well, in a broader sense, when we talk about these things, you know, there isn't a purely telepathic and intuitive explanation, and then that there are spiritual explanations for these things. So, I mean, I believe that we can make certain decisions having nothing to do with the spirit world that can either bring on or avert, you know, happenings that could be horrible or
yeah, we live in a cause and effect world.
Yeah. So, but you know, the spiritual explanation. I mean, let's say that in this case with the bus driver, you know, let's just for argument's sake say that he did stop and a child, you know, was hit by a car while loading, you know, the bus. Now, the spiritual explanation might be, well, listen, that was this child's journey. The child may have, you know, chosen this, you know, while, you know, before incarnating into this life. And if that didn't happen that way, it would have happened another way. You know, then, you know, just purely disallowing the spirit involvement, you know, it's just some people have this ability, these precognitive moments where they can pick up information from from whatever source, and they, it's nothing to do with spirit. It's just how we navigate our lives. So some people don't see these things as being separate and distinct. You know, everything is planned, and everything, nothing can be averted, you know, but I think that it's really true that we can pay attention to our dreams and these precognitive moments and take action that changes the course of events.
Well, I think that pretty much has been proven, at least within the spiritual world. They call it manifesting, right? So something that you normally would not be able to get, you're able to manifest and get and have. So that would change the course of something where you're taking an active role in doing it, where you wouldn't have done it before if you didn't know that you were capable of doing that.
Right. Well, the hardest thing is, I mean, this is all pure conjecture, because like you said, I mean, if there was evidence, then we could go back, you know, and for instance, sometimes you hear cases where somebody decides for some reason to make a right turn instead of the usual left that they make on the way to work, and then they hear on the radio that at that exact moment there was a horrible accident exactly where they would have been.
Right.
Well, you have some tangible evidence to go back on.
Well, I also recall it was a year ago or 2 years ago that plane that went down, and there was the mother was dropping off two of her three children to get on that plane, and the rest of them were going to come later, and the kid insisted he didn't want to go on the plane because he knew the plane was going to crash. And she assured him everything was all right, and he got on the plane, and of course the plane went down. There's a great example of, I mean, he told her this ahead.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think we have to pay more attention to our gut. On the other hand, you can't become neurotic about this thing, you know, and worry about every single decision.
That's my point with the question I raise about the bus driver, is that if he's underdeveloped in this thing and he's just saying, well, I did it because I had this sensation that there was going to be a problem, maybe he did, maybe he misread it. I mean, even the best mediums get information wrong.
Right. Well, as you mentioned at the top of the show, we have a wonderful guest tonight, Bill Vandenbush, and he has a really compelling story. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to bring on Bill, so stay with us. Be back in a few moments.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, The Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Bill VandenBush. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.com. Bob?
And Bill VandenBush completed a Master of Social Work degree at the University of Washington and worked as a mental health counselor and program coordinator for the Department of Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Tacoma, Washington, for nearly 20 years. His compelling near-death experiences are described in his book, If Morning Never Comes, A Soldier's Near-Death Experience on the Battlefield. Bill is an inspiring public speaker. He's appeared in several PBS and BBC specials that feature NDEs, and he shares his story often in the media and in public gatherings. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be here.
And great to have you. I did read the book. I thought it was very compelling. I enjoyed it. And as I was reading it, you know, I reflected that, you know, we're about the same age. You know, I started my college career in 1968, the same year that you enlisted in the Army. And as you point out, unfortunately, this was not a time when soldiers were held in high regard. And as I read it, I felt a bit shamed, I must admit, because, you know, I remember at the time I was confusing my disdain for the war with the men that were fighting it. You know, as I read on, I read that you actually decided to enlist And before you decided to enlist, I mean, you were engaging in the same activities that I was. I mean, I was growing my hair long, I was partying, I was smoking pot, I was going to concerts, and I was peacefully protesting the Vietnam War. What changed for you, and why?
Well, the biggest thing, I think, is we were out protesting one day, and we've been up in the hills singing protest songs, and we were riding back, and I was riding in the back of a pickup truck, and we were all having a good time. And it just kind of dawned on me that I don't really know where Vietnam is, you know, where it's physically located. And I really didn't know much about this country, and I didn't know why we were having a war there. And I was also concerned about why this war was so different from other wars. I had grown up in the John Wayne generation, like you, and I thought that, you know, World War One was an honorable war. World War Two was honorable. Even in Korea, veterans came back and were held in high esteem. But during the Vietnam War, that didn't seem to happen. And I didn't quite understand that. So I thought the only way to really grasp why these soldiers were not held in high esteem and what this war was about was to go do it. And the same reason I went to protest, because I believed the war was wrong, I went to war because I didn't understand why the war was wrong.
Yes, well, it's a logical, you know, explanation. I mean, people, you know, as you tell it, they might say that, you know, this was being brave, or, you know, you were being curious, or you were being impulsive, and it wasn't well thought out. I guess that after you enlisted, reality set in, and did you think that you might have made a mistake initially?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge shock to go in the military and to go through military training, because the first thing they do in the military is cut off your hair and put you in a green uniform and make everybody look the same and conform. And training was tough. They tear you down to bare bones and then they build you back up. And I was thinking that maybe I had made a bit of a mistake. And when I went to Vietnam, it was just extremely frightening. I mean, the thought of going to war, I didn't even know what really to expect. But I knew that that this was the real thing. This was life and death, that people were going to die. And I was going to see them die.
And I know that I like the way you describe in the book. I mean, the Army, which I never realized, that they actually give you a license, which is, like they grant you authority to kill, which has to do crazy things to your head. I mean, in one way or another.
Yeah, the Geneva Convention card is a license to kill. It's your authority to fight and to take lives in the name of war or in the name of your country. And that is a little frightening to think that you have that license to do that.
And just to set the stage before we get into, you know, the actual circumstances of your near-death experience, I mean, before you enlisted, did you have any sense of spirituality or of being connected at all? Or how would you describe?
I had some. I wasn't a terribly religious person. I grew up, my mother was a Methodist. My father was a Catholic. And my father didn't go to church at all, and my mother would take us to the Methodist church. But I kind of felt like religion was a little hypocritical, because they told me if I didn't believe and I would hate to see my friends go to hell. So I went and talked to them about their religion. And I went to a variety of different churches, and they all kind of said the same thing. So I was rather confused about religion, but I did believe that there was higher power. And I always had a sense that there was so much more that we didn't know about spiritually. But I never really pursued it at the time.
So before the actual attack, where you were stranded and really mortally wounded, you describe, I remember reading, a very uneasy feeling. I mean, you knew that something bad was about to happen, and I wondered as I was reading it, was that because of your training in combat? Because at that point you were already a highly trained warrior. Or do you think that this was an intuitive experience where you were perceiving what was to come?
I think it was a combination of both.
Okay.
My training and then also my experience in combat. You become, after you've been in combat situations for a while, there's a heightening of your awareness of when you're walking into a situation that could be very dangerous. And I think that just that intuition that I developed as a soldier, plus the training, led to that sense that of knowing when something was going to happen.
Mm. So, if you don't mind, can you get into the attack itself and
absolutely,
yeah,
it was my two best friends had just gone on R&R, and we had always sworn that as long as the three of us were together, we'd cover each other's backs and get out of there all in one piece. Well, that morning they had called to go on R&R, and they left. And I was out in the field, essentially by myself, but I was put in charge of a squad, and we were just going to move back to a rear area and rest for 4 or 5 days. And on our way back, we got a call that a helicopter had been shot down. So I volunteered my squad, and a couple of other squads volunteered, and they came and picked us up in helicopters and took us to the place where this helicopter had been shot down. Well, when we got there, we immediately started taking fire. And he said, I had this sense that something was really wrong, something was very different, that this was, something was about to happen that was far more dangerous than just our normal combat assault, which I had been in many, many. Hundreds, actually, in the time that I had been in Vietnam. So I proceeded with caution. We got off the helicopter. I took my squad and moved them around to the base of a hill, and the company commander signaled me, said he was going to take his men and the other squad to go the other way, and indicated that we would meet up on the other side where the helicopter was, the downed helicopter. And so as I moved my men, we kept taking more and more fire. So I dispersed my men into a place where I thought they would be safe. But I stayed back a little bit, and there was a little dip in the ground. And I was able to stay there so that I could see where all the fire was coming from and then direct my men to fire in that direction. Well, I could hear that the other squads were pinned down as well. And I heard a couple of jet planes fly over, and I knew that the company commander had called in an airstrike. And I watched as the planes flew over, and they dropped their first load of bombs. And I thought, boy, if they let those bombs go just a few seconds earlier, they'll come land right on my position, because I was at the base of the hill. And so... as I watched the jet planes circle around, sure enough, they let those bombs go early, and they fell right on my position. bomb hit me in the face. A big piece of shrapnel crushed my face, tore out my right eye. I had shrapnel down my right side. And there I was. I'd been in country about 10 months. Was a hardened combat soldier. And I thought, this is it. I'm going to die right here. Thousands of miles from home. No mom there to kiss it and make it better. I'm just going to die right here by myself. And I felt terribly alone at that moment. And then suddenly I realized that once I accept death, that everything's okay. And I accepted that death, and I suddenly had this sense of peace within me. And the next thing I knew, I was walking into a dark tunnel, and I was moving forward, and I came out in this absolutely beautiful, bright, white light. And I had left behind all the pain and the agony of the battlefield, and I was no longer in my human form. I was now a ball of energy within this white light. And I sensed this unconditional love, this feeling that no matter what I had done prior to this moment, that I was loved very deeply by everyone in this place. And I had a sense that there was a lot of knowledge here of the universe and about how things work and about people and the course of our lives and our purpose on Earth. And it wasn't academic knowledge. It was more like, I guess you would call it philosophical knowledge. And while I was standing there in awe of this incredibly beautiful place, another ball of energy came over to me, and I immediately recognized it as my grandfather, who had died about 5 years earlier. And we immediately communicated, and we talked a little bit, and he said that he was going to be my guide and take me in and show me around, and that everything was going to be all right, and I shouldn't be concerned. And we were just conversing, and it was so joyous. It was just, it's so hard to describe the level of peace and comfort and love that existed in that place. But it was beyond anything I had ever experienced in life.
Well,
yes, go ahead.
Yeah, it's certainly extremely moving and compelling, and you experience so many of the features of the near-death experience that are common to a lot of people that have since had near-death experiences, and to have to be able to leave your body in the middle of that battlefield where you really shouldn't have been survived it. I mean, with your injuries, it was so extensive. And inexplicably, you were guided to a place where others could rescue you. And I don't know how that was possible. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit more, after the break. But there's so much that we can learn from your experience. So I really appreciate your laying out the details of it like that. We're going to go to a quick break. We come back, we're going to find out a lot more about Bill's, near-death experience. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Bill VandenBush. Our sponsor is the WindBridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. We'd like to bring our listeners up to date with some of our announcements and remind them to check the events page on our website regularly for all events and announcements, and that's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. The annual Holidays Past raffle drawing is tomorrow, December 23rd, so get your entries in before midnight tonight. This raffle, simply put, is how we pay our bills. So please participate. Who knows? You may walk away with as many as 5 medium readings in our drawing tomorrow. The mediums in this year's raffle are Catherine Nadal, Heidi Jaffe, Tracy Lee Nash, Renata Santarelli, and Lee Ashley. Our first webinar of the year is Spirit Talks and Spirit Walks, After Death Communication in the Laboratory, presented by Dr. Julie Beischel and Mark Bocuzzi. That's set for February 15th, 2017 at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Our annual grief retreat is open for super early bird registration on the website. We do recommend booking early, as last year the rooms at the retreat filled and some attendees had to stay off premises. If you're booking early, please keep in mind our no-refund policy. This event only gets better each year, so plan to join us this July 14th through 16th. Be one of only 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Rebecca Ann LoCicero, Joe Peretta, and Gina Simone. They will be working alongside our other professionals and facilitators, and it also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. And please, 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 help us keep our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, Great Nonprofits, and Wellesley. Just remember to name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Back to you, Bob.
And we're talking with Bill Vandenbush. The book is called If Morning Never Comes, A Soldier's Near-Death Experience on the Battlefield. If you wanted to get in touch with Bill, his email is hawkeyebilly65@gmail.com. Bill, we were talking about your near-death experience and wonderful description of being, you know, bathed in light and surrounded by love. I was interested that you described becoming a ball of energy, that awakened to the existence of your soul. And you also encountered another ball of energy, you know, which turned out to be your deceased grandfather, who you're able to communicate with. And then a third ball of energy, which you described as a great spirit. And that spirit advised you that you couldn't stay. But what I wanted to ask you about is that you described having a real concern about this at that point. I mean, now that you were in the spirit realm, I mean, how could you go back when you no longer existed in that dimension? So what answers were you given to that?
Well, I was told by this great spirit, this other authoritarian ball of energy that approached, that I had a higher purpose to fulfill, and that if I went back, I would live through whatever happened on that day, and that I would have a long and productive life, that I would have purposes to fulfill throughout that life. And it kind of given me some sense of what that was. And just gave me a sense of peace at the thought of going back. It was, part of it was just kind of being a good soldier and obeying orders. But the other part was knowing that at some point, I would come back to the light, and that this life on Earth was necessary to learn what I needed to learn and to grow and to help others, so that when I came back to the light, I would be a more advanced being.
Mm. And as readers will see when they read your book, I mean, your injuries were so profound. And at every step of the way, you were told in no uncertain terms by the medical community that, you know, you'd never talk, you'd never walk, you'd never be able to eat on your own, you'd never be able to do. And throughout it all, I guess it was that message from the Great Spirit that kept you going, because somehow you knew the end result. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, and that spirit stayed with me when I came back, and it drove me to heal myself, which was the first purpose that I had to fulfill coming back to this life, was to heal myself and to make myself functional again. It took me quite a while. I mean, it wasn't just a matter of days or weeks. It was many years of work, and I still have to work on it. I don't have vocal cords, so I have to practice speaking almost every day, and I have to learn how to make the sounds and make a voice and make that voice be heard so that I could speak to people without having some device in my throat. So at the time when I first, I actually got transferred from an Army hospital to a VA hospital. So I had a tube in my throat, a trach tube, and they told me they were going to remove my left arm and that I had a collapsed lung and all the damage to my throat that I wouldn't be able to breathe. And I knew that all I had to do was keep working on it, that this great spirit had instilled in me this desire to heal myself and to move forward in life and to not go backwards. And that's what I did. I worked on it every day. And like I say, I still do. It's not something that just goes away. I mean, it's an integral part of my life, having to try to be healthy and functional.
It's truly amazing. I mean, I don't think that I've ever interviewed anybody, or I ever will, that didn't have vocal cords and that was not using a mechanical device. So that in and of itself is some sort of either it's a miracle or it's incredible fortitude or it's spirit guided. I don't know which. But
it's a little bit of each of those things. I think that there's definitely, I feel the spirit guiding me to speak. But it's also, you know, my own personal effort that makes it happen.
Yeah. And I think Bill,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think also that what makes your story especially compelling is we have to realize that, like, Raymond Moody didn't coin the term near-death experience until 1975, which was well after your experience. So, today's world where we see a tremendous number of books hitting the market about people having near-death experiences, one has to question how much of it may be, part of their conscious interpretation because of all the literature. But when you had your near-death experience, you didn't know what a near-death experience was.
I never even heard that term or heard anything about a near-death experience until 20 years later.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard that term, I took a chance and I told my story about this out-of-body experience. And somebody said, "What do you have is a near-death experience?" And, I kind of took it from there, but I had no idea what that was, what that experience was about.
You also talked about that how you, when you were trying to describe the ineffable, about what it was like in this other realm, you mentioned that you knew that your personality was still intact. So you were still Bill Vandenbush, but your focus was in another direction. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, it's like I didn't take with me all of my memories. All the data that's stored in the brain, that didn't go with me. But the sense of who I am, the essence of who I am and what I had experienced did go with me. So that as a spirit being, I was unique because I carried with me this sense of who I was as a human being. And obviously, I had learned things, even though I didn't know I was learning spiritual things. When I got there, I did know spiritual things. And I knew things about
Yeah, and I know that it was very difficult, especially at that time, with nobody really knowing what an NDE was, to talk to people about it. I think at one point you even stopped trying to talk to people about your experience. Maybe you felt it was no longer worth the effort. People weren't getting it.
When I first came home, I wanted to tell people about this wonderful experience, and I tried to talk about it a little bit, but of course I couldn't really speak very well, and so it became very difficult to try to tell the story, and then nobody seemed to want to hear it anyway. It seemed like they kind of gave me funny looks when I talked about being out of my body, so I gave up, and I didn't talk about it for 20 years, and then I was in grad school and taking a class called Confrontations with Living and Dying. And the first night of the class, the professor says, talk about your most profound experience with death. Well, I kind of searched my soul for a few minutes to think about whether I really wanted to talk about this. And then I told the story about being wounded on the battlefield and going into the white light. And that's when he said, what you had was a near-death experience, and told me that I should contact this lady named Kimberly Clark Sharp, who ran this group in Seattle, and I eventually did contact her and began talking about this experience. And even when I tried to say, you know, I think I've had enough, I don't really want to talk about this anymore, it always comes back, it always comes up. It's just part of who I am now, and I know that for the rest of my life here on Earth, I have to talk about this experience, and it's important. It's
absolutely
important to do that and share it with people.
And you also you mentioned towards the end of the book that you felt our purpose in life was to balance our spirit and earthly environment.
Yes.
In what sense did you mean that?
Well, nature always seeks a balance. So does the energy of the universe. It always seeks a balance. So because we are part nature and part energy from the universe, we have to seek this balance between being organic and being energy. So the universe is constantly seeking this balance by gaining knowledge from the beings that exist in the universe and having the spirit energy enter those beings. Just as we on Earth, and when we're born, we have a spirit energy that enters our body. And throughout our lives, we try to find that balance by learning and growing, caring, learning about love, learning about interactions with other people. And I think the word love is so many times overused, but it's true. That's what it is. It's just pure love, caring for one another, having feelings for not only human beings, but spirit beings. And it's important that we find that love and that caring, that sensitivity towards one another as human beings. That's what makes us better spirit beings.
I think so, and the beautifully said, and love that appears is what binds us and is the conduit, I think, for our connection to the universe. We're talking with Bill Vandenbush. The book is called If Morning Never Comes, A Soldier's Near-Death Experience on the Battlefield. It's a great book. Pick it up. You'll enjoy reading it. Teach you a lot of lessons on a lot of levels. So, Bill, thank you for being with us. I hope you can join us again sometime, and keep up the good work and the good fight.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate you having me on today, and I hope this was a good thing for your listeners. So,
I know that it was. Have a good evening.
Now we ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Alex Hanna, Veronica James, Rich LeBlay, Lauren Ramnath, Vince Mattia, Isabel Ginsberg, Diane Archangel, James Rafferty, Donna Mello, Stanley Mueller, Miriam Pierschka, Glenna Irwin, David Haith, and Michael Tim. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.